The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start with the cover story headline on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal. Fighting to protect your data, confidential trade secrets. Trade secrets lawsuits have skyrocketed, leaving startups, small businesses vulnerable. And that's the headline on the front page. The article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline. How a thumb drive could cost a company millions of dollars. And this article is written by Jennifer Henderson. A growing area of work is suddenly keeping Raleigh attorney Randy Avram quite busy. It's a rising tide in trade secrets lawsuits, driven by changes in the law, a healthy economy, and the ease in which employees can steal vital information. In the old days, if you wanted to take something from an employer, you'd have to bring boxes out of your office, says Avram, who leads the labor and employment practice at Kilpatrick Townsend. Now you can just leave with a thumb drive in your pocket. While stealing secrets today may be easier because of technological advances, it is also making employers nervous, edgy, and angry. Trade secrets lawsuits are on a precipitous rise, and that could be bad news for tech startups, life sciences concerns, and the entrepreneurial ecosystem in general because of the cost associated in fighting or defending federal lawsuits. Lex Machina, a California-based legal analytics firm, estimates that between 2016 and 2017, there was a 140% increase in the number of trade secrets cases filed in federal courts in North Carolina. That torrid pace is continuing in 2018. Across the U.S., there was a 32% increase in federal cases between 2016 and 2017. Companies sue individuals and other companies when formulas, compilations, and techniques, as defined by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, are compromised. In almost all of the cases, plaintiffs typically contend an economic loss because of the breach. While there may be several theories from experts relating to why trade secret cases are on the rise, almost everyone agrees that a change in federal law in 2016 may be the single biggest reason for the increase. In 2016, President Barack Obama signed the Defend Trade Secrets Act, or DTSA, into law, creating an avenue for companies to file trade secrets litigation in federal court. The act swept through Congress. The Senate vote was 87-0. Amid a landscape of inconsistent state laws and staggering amounts of theft of American intellectual property, a 2017 report from the Commission on Theft of American Intellectual Property said the annual cost to the U.S. economy continues to exceed $225 billion in counterfeit goods, pirated software, and theft of trade secrets, and could be as high as $600 billion. And the potential for IP theft is particularly relevant for where we live, Avram says. When companies are looking to scale up, taking a chance on expensive litigation may spell their demise before they ever really get started. You wouldn't want to initiate that litigation unless you're really concerned about the trade secret you think someone has misappropriated, says Zeb Anderson, a partner at Smith Anderson. But some firms in the Triangle will feel they have no choice. As Avram points out, many rising Triangle companies are small firms who gained venture capital backing because of the potential of their innovation. A lot of what their value is, says Avram, is their idea. Local cases with high stakes. While the DTSA is one reason for the bump in trade secrets litigation, there are other contributing factors: a healthy economy that leads to people changing jobs, and the blistering pace of technological advances. Trade secrets litigation is a technical and pricey form of litigation for companies, but the costs and potential awards may be worth it for companies when high stakes are involved, the technology, customer bases, and sales strategies at the centers of their business models. As Anderson points out, whether an employee takes things thoughtlessly or deliberately with bad intent doesn't matter. The bottom line is, as Anderson says, it is all problematic. While it may be difficult to picture an item the size of a paperclip at the center of a federal lawsuit and millions of dollars worth of proprietary business information, that's what one new lawsuit involving a top Triangle firm alleges. On June 22, a subsidiary of Raleigh-based contract research giant Syneos Health sued former employees and accused them of stealing trade secrets in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of North Carolina. According to the complaint, Alan French Jr. formed a competing company, Equitas Life Sciences of Vermont, with a former employee of a top client of Inventive Health in November 2015, while French was still a managing director with Inventive. Inc. Research and Inventive merged in 2017 to form Syneos. The lawsuit alleges French secretly transitioned client work from Inventive to Equitas and performed the work through Equitas, including that from two top clients worth several $1 million in revenue from 2013 to 2016. And the complaint alleges French told his bosses the client's need for consulting services had simply diminished to explain the loss of revenue. The complaint further states that a number of other employees under French left the company and secretly transitioned two top clients to his new firm, and it states that 2 days before French's resignation, he accessed myriad confidential documents and then inserted a thumb drive into the computer immediately afterwards, presumably, the lawsuit states, to take confidential information to Equitas. But Syneos is hardly alone. Other trade secret cases filed in federal court in North Carolina recently have been brought by both large companies like Syneos, including MERS N.A., and smaller entities, including Shuck & Shack Franchising LLC. Last July, the Oyster Bar filed suit against a pair of franchisees over their opening of a similar eatery in Fletcher, just south of Asheville. Shuck & Shack Franchising LLC alleged in the complaint that landed in federal court that the opening of the Shuck & Brew Oyster Bar in Fletcher amounted to trademark and trade dress infringement, as well as misappropriation of trade secrets. The defendants in the case filed a response and counterclaim. Ultimately, both sides agreed to the dismissal of the case. While companies that file trade secrets litigation run the gamut when it comes to size and type, there is one simple formula. The most likely companies to initiate that kind of litigation would be companies that have really valuable secret information, says Anderson. That information may include formulas or technology they're developing and haven't patented. Companies may have a variety of reasons for not pursuing patents. For instance, while patents offer protection, other companies can see the technology and information behind them once they expire. However, trade secrets are secret as long as companies can keep them that way. Technology and life sciences companies are prime examples of companies with trade secrets, says Anderson. All the stuff that's happening in Research Triangle Park, those are the types of businesses that most likely have a need for trade secret protection, he says. Lucrative business. One industry that is not complaining from this rise in trade secret cases is, of course, the obvious one, legal. I've had more trade secrets cases in the past 5 years than in the past 10 years combined, says Tony Biller, managing partner of the Raleigh office of Milwaukee-based Michael Best. Aside from the DTSA alone, the increase, Biller believes, coincides with the passage of the American Invents Act back in 2011. It's been increasingly difficult to assert patent rights in the U.S. as there's been a fairly broad perception of patent litigation abuse, says Biller. Patent practitioners have mentioned trade secrets litigation as an alternative to patent protection because it can be very expensive. Rachel Bailey, a legal data expert at Lex Machina, also notes, that is one of the other reasons we are thinking there may be more interest right now. And while trade secrets litigation can be expensive for companies, Biller says patent litigation typically is even more expensive. A small patent lawsuit through trial has average legal fees of $1 million per side, says Biller. Kilpatrick's Avram says he also believes there are several factors contributing to the bump he's seeing in trade secrets cases, along with the DTSA. When the economy wasn't quite as good, you didn't see as many people moving from place to place, Avram says, and people competing for talent and everybody trying to get an edge. Companies are seeing employees download information to a Dropbox account or a thumb drive, he says, for instance, several days before their departure to a competitor is announced. Sometimes the former employee will attempt to erase what they've done, and sometimes they're so brazen they don't even bother to do that, he says. Risk worth avoiding. Overall, the value of tangible assets for companies is rising, and that comes at a time when a strong economy means employees are more likely to move around. Lucas Osborne, associate professor of law at Campbell Law School in Raleigh, points to data showing that in 1975, intangible assets, such as trade secrets, made up only about 17% of the Standard & Poor's 500 market value. Now, the most recent data show intangible assets topping 80% of market value. Out of 185 trade secrets cases filed in federal court in North Carolina, open in some form since 2009, 132 of those cases have a commercial component, businesses on both sides, according to Lex Machina data. These days, quips Osborne, you have to drive a nail through a hard drive and burn it before you can tell someone information is really gone. For many companies, even those that take proactive measures to guard their trade secrets, that's a frightening reality with incredibly high stakes involved. That's especially true when it comes to startups, says Osborne, which often operate on a winner-gets-all-the-profits mentality while everyone else is left in the dust. No one uses MySpace anymore, Osborne says. Everyone is racing for this huge prize, and they're more willing to hire away and cut corners. In many cases of employee movement, employees head out the door with valuable information considered trade secrets, and that can lead to lawsuits with awards of hundreds of thousands of dollars in damages to plaintiffs. Bailey of Lex Machina notes that cases with damages can be used as guideposts for whether the two sides should settle. We found 8 cases with damages awards and trade secret claims in North Carolina, particularly only one case awarded punitive damages, she says. Damages on those 8 cases totaled about $12.2 million. In one case, the dollars included $720,000 for attorneys, $600,000 for actual damages, and $100,000 in punitive damages, among other lesser damages. At the same time, Bailey says, injunctions are incredibly important in trade secret cases. Parties often allege trade secret misappropriation after an employee or business partner takes a hard drive or other proprietary data to another company or to use for their own new venture. Injunctions often require the return of physical material in order to stop the flow of information. For trade secret cases, North Carolina has more denials than the national average, according to Bailey. For example, North Carolina has 50% grant rate for preliminary injunctions on the merits, while the national grant rate is 57%. The hope for many plaintiffs is to file and have trade secrets litigation resolved before landing in court. Trade secrets litigation can be expensive, Anderson says. You don't want to be in the middle of it unless you really need it. Now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. French forms film production company with new L.A. office. A Raleigh public relations executive is jumping into the film industry. Rick French, CEO of French West Vaughan, has combined with Patrick Shanahan to form Prix Productions, spelled P-R-I-X. I guess it would be Pre, as in Grand Prix. French will serve as managing partner with a focus on IP acquisition, financing, and production, and Shanahan will shift to Los Angeles, will focus on writing and directing. It's a natural extension from running a PR and ad agency, French tells Biz. You are creating content all the time, and this is long-form storytelling. The move comes at a time when the film industry is evolving as Netflix and Amazon ascend and look for quality productions. French and Shanahan plan to forge a team that can scale up quickly to get films into production. Right now, it's almost easier to get projects moving outside Hollywood, he says, and there is an absolute thirst for good content. French and Shanahan are already working on a story about the relationship between Buddy Holly and Clarence Collins, founder of Little Anthony and the Imperials. Prix plans a $12 million budget for the film to be called Clear Lake, after the small town in Iowa where Holly died in a plane crash in 1959. Casting is scheduled to begin in the fall. French says the movie to film is a long-term play. We intend to build this out and add more projects and add more people, he says. French and Shanahan are also working on a documentary, which will be much less expensive to produce. The films are not likely to be shot in North Carolina, since, as French points out, other states have more attractive tax credits. French had been involved in trying to produce a film based on the book, Not Without Hope, about a tragic fishing trip where 3 football players, including former NC State University star Corey Smith, drowned. That project, years in the making, stalled when the film company had financial issues. I've watched this and seen how frustrating and painfully slow it can be, he says. I don't have a lot of patience for that. If the only thing that is keeping us from moving this along is money, that's easy. That's something I have access to, that Patrick has access to. French didn't say how much was invested in this new venture or its future projects, but called the commitment significant. Adding a floral touch in downtown Raleigh, a woman raised in an orphanage in Lebanon is looking to brighten downtown Raleigh. Bayerda Alkchar, who arrived here because she had a chance to attend NC State University, recently opened Petale, spelled P-E-T-A-L-E, at 15 West Harget Street. Her shop is inspired by the floral shops she has seen in cities such as Paris and London. "Everybody has flowers on the street. In Europe, they do that," she says. "Here, I felt nobody has flowers. As an entrepreneur, I felt there was a need for something like that." Alcatraz says she worked out a deal with Greg Haddam for 800 square feet and opened in June. Charlotte once was known as Banktown. What happened? Charlotte was North Carolina's Banktown, a city proud of its banking tradition, but the steady flow of mergers and acquisitions in the banking community has left Charlotte with only one bank, Bank of America, based in the city. As recently as 2007, the city had 8 bank headquarters. On July 1, Charlotte's New Dominion Bank became part of the Newark, Ohio-based Park National Corporation in a $76.4 million acquisition. New Dominion will keep its name and its ability to make decisions at the local level. But still, Charlotte once relied on the muscle of its local banks, especially Bank of America and First Union, to wield financial muscle in the market and build the city. Home of Golf gets into the brewing business. The Pinehurst Resort is jumping into North Carolina's rising beer scene. The resort plans to open Pinehurst Brewing Company this fall and is renovating the former Village Powerhouse, a steam plant dating back to 1895. The resort has hired its first brewer, Eric Mitchell, former head brewer of Heist Brewery in Charlotte. Pinehurst is looking to attract younger visitors in an era when young people are showing declining interest in the sport. "For almost a century, the steam plant provided power to the village. We hope this next incarnation of the building as the Pinehurst Brewing Company provides a surge of energy for the entire community," says Tom Pashley, the resort president. Out of the Shark Tank and into production. 2 years ago, Chapel Hill entrepreneur David Cohen got an offer from Kevin O'Leary of Shark Tank. What seemed to be Sunscreener's big break didn't materialize in an investment, one of multiple hurdles Cohen has faced with the product he hopes will make a dent in skin cancer. Now that he's shipping a product, albeit in a different format than initially promised, to his 1,300 Kickstarter backers, Biz asked if he'd consider going back on the ABC show. "We got the opportunity to go on to Shark Tank way too early, but when they come calling, it's a little hard to say no," Cohen says. "I don't know if they ever take repeat people on the show, but in a few months, we'll be in a very different place, and it might look very different." And finally, TBJ has a new home, moves across Glenwood Avenue. After a long run at 3600 Glenwood Avenue, Triangle Business Journal has moved across the street to the new three-story building occupied by Pinnacle Bank. Our address is 3515 Glenwood Avenue, Suite 220, Raleigh, NC, 27612. And the main number remains 919-327-1000. It's a cool, open space, and Biz especially likes the desks that rise with a touch of a button. Thanks for reading TBJ, and we look forward to serving you from our new perch. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Tech and Transportation page, written by Lauren Onasorge. Car bike hybrids? You might see more. A scale-up could happen soon at Organic Transit, a 6-year-old vehicle startup in Durham. That's according to Rob Cotter, an innovator who worked on Porsche and BMW race cars in California prior to developing the car-like hybrids. The vehicle he's working on now is called the ELF, an enclosed vehicle that is legally a bicycle. It can park anywhere a bicycle can, he says. About 1,000 of the plastic colorful vehicles have been sold, he says. Right now, the car Organic Transit is really a niche vehicle, owned by the likes of comedian Jerry Seinfeld and parked at large campuses such as American Underground for easy mobility. But Cotter says a scale-up is coming, and he is raising funds to make it happen. He sees small vehicles as the future of urban travel and points to the emergence of bike share and even electric scooter sharing as evidence of that evolution. Things are evolving, he says. It's only a short matter of time before many of the big players are going to say, scooters are great, but it does rain. It does get cold. He says his enclosed vehicles are the answer to those who want the size of a scooter but want to be protected from the elements. In recent months, he has met with investors and vehicle manufacturers and says things are starting to move really fast. We've been very conservative all along, and now it's time to ride the wave that we're on, being technically advanced above and beyond many of the other technologies in the micro-mobility space, he says. He also envisions the vehicle in the autonomous space. An ELF equipped with sensors is currently undergoing an autonomous test pilot with the University of Washington. Get Spiffy looks beyond car washes to add new services. Research Triangle Park startup Get Spiffy is moving past car washes. The company, which started as an on-demand car washing service, has added what co-founder Scott Wingo hopes will make a big impact on how people drive, Spiffy Blue, an onboard diagnostic sensor so drivers know when to go to a mechanic and when procrastinating's okay. When we started Spiffy, we wanted to do more than just wash cars, Wingo says. We started collecting information from our customers, and we started thinking the app could move from a service orientation to a health orientation. And it would be even better if we could get more information out of the car. Spiffy's app incorporates a vehicle's VIN number, which adds in warranty information that can notify drivers when a service is recommended and when there's a recall. There's a pretty big market for people who want to do better. For people who want to better understand their car, Wingo says. Local transit officials scramble after state dollars are slashed. Transit agencies across the state face a funding shortfall for 2019 after the state maintenance assistance program was cut by more than $8.5 million, a 26% reduction from $32.5 million in 2018. North Carolina Department of Transportation Secretary Jim Trogdon wrote in a memo to agencies that the cuts are all due to reduced revenue, primarily from motor fuels tax. We're still assessing what it means, says Jeff Mann, general manager of Go Triangle. His agency sees a cut of more than $700,000, money earmarked for preventative maintenance. At Go Raleigh, Transit Administrator David Eatman says his agency's cut, at $747,357, is roughly the equivalent of two buses on the street for an entire year. Brian Litchfield, transit director for Chapel Hill, will see a cut of $686,444. We, like most transit systems throughout the state, use that as part of our operating budget. We now need to find a way to address that budget gap, which will be a challenge, he says. CSX Intermodal Project now has a smaller scale. Plans for the Carolina Connector, a CSX intermodal terminal that transportation officials have said could boost economic development in Edgecombe County, have been revived, but the plan is much smaller than initially announced and has the state footing much of the bill. After CSX halted its plans last year, state officials returned to the negotiating table to secure another commitment from the company, says North Carolina Department of Transportation Secretary Jim Trogdon. This time, NCDOT is investing up to $118.1 million for site development and roadway construction. CSX, according to a spokesman, is fronting about $40 million of the now $160 million project, including costs for property, equipment, design and construction oversight, and operational expertise. In the original plan, NCDOT was investing about $100 million in a massive $272 million facility. Trogdon says it's essentially the same investment from the state. What we've got in that $118 million is $10 million in other transportation improvements, he says, noting many of them had already been in NCDOT's plans. And finally, in a section called They Said It, with the first half of 2018 complete, Triangle Business Journal asked local investors how they would characterize the year so far in terms of entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurial enthusiasm knows no bounds. AI, blockchain, robotics, BI analytics, all transformational technologies in 2018. That's from Rick Vandeveen, a Raleigh-based managing director at River City's Capital Funds. The next quote is from Lister Delgado, managing partner of Durham-based Idea Fund Partners. As strong as ever, innovation remains high, economic trends are positive, capital is abundant, lots of positive indicators. And next is David Gardner, founder of Cary-based Co-Founders Capital. We do a great job not getting the kids all hot and bothered about entrepreneurship, but we still provide only limited local funding sources. And finally, from John Replogle, co-founder of Raleigh-based One Better Ventures. This is the golden age of entrepreneurship. The ability to start and build a business has been democratized. And now we turn to the On Life Sciences page, written by Jennifer Henderson. States' major health systems, CCPN, link up. The state's major health systems have linked up with Community Care Physicians Network, ahead of North Carolina's Medicaid reform. North Carolina provider-owned plans, a collaboration of 11 health systems and Presbyterian Healthcare Services, will partner with CCPN's network of physicians on a care management arrangement ahead of the move from a fee-for-service Medicaid model to a managed care Medicaid model in the state. In North Carolina's current Medicaid arrangement, the state pays healthcare providers directly for each service provided to beneficiaries. In the new model, the NC Department of Health and Human Services will delegate management of services to prepaid health plans selected through a bidding process. NCPOP aims to respond to the state's request for proposal as part of the bidding process, along with the likes of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, WellCare Health Plans, Aetna, and United Healthcare. Also part of the bidding process is expected to be a physician-led health plan, Carolina Complete Health. The reality is that NCPOP is comprised of the major hospitals in the state, says Dr. Gregory Adams, a member of the CCPN Board of Managers and a Boone pediatrician. They're going to have to be involved with Medicaid. Sick newborns and resulting pediatric care is where a lot of the money is spent, says Adams. There needs to be a close relationship with the physicians, largely in rural parts of the state, taking care of these kids, he says. When it comes to pediatric patients, rural practices need the hospitals and vice versa, he says. Coordination and collaboration between the two are crucial in providing better care and keeping kids out of emergency departments. Eventually, as we try to contain the costs in healthcare, there are only so many places to save money. Efficiency is one of them, says Adams. The 11 NCPOP systems include Cape Fear Valley Health, Atrium Health, Cone Health, Duke University Health System, Mission Health System, New Hanover Regional Medical Center, Novant Health, UNC Healthcare, Vidant Health, Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center, and WakeMed Health and Hospitals. WakeMed expanding in Cary at new medical office park. WakeMed is getting ready to anchor a new 125,000 square foot medical office building at the Medical Park of Cary. That's as the healthcare organization is in the middle of a $60 million project for two new floors and renovations at WakeMed Cary Hospital. REIT Healthcare Trust of America, based out of Scottsdale, Arizona, announced plans to redevelop the existing 90,000 square foot medical park, including construction of the new 125,000 square foot building. This is completely separate from the hospital expansion, a WakeMed spokeswoman said in an email. This building is across the street from the hospital and is home to several WakeMed physician practices offices and outpatient services. According to Healthcare Trust of America, the redevelopment will grow the size of the medical park to about 170,000 square feet of medical office space. Construction on the redevelopment is slated to begin next year and be completed in 2021. Durham generics company sued over drug. Biopharmaceutical company Amgen of California has filed a patent infringement lawsuit against growing generics company Accord Healthcare and its parent company Intas Pharmaceuticals. While Intas is based in India, Accord Healthcare calls Durham its U.S. headquarters. The company has recently more than doubled its square footage in Durham. Amgen's lawsuit stems from Accord Healthcare's plans to manufacture and sell a generic version of Amgen's drug Sensibar for the management of a type of hyperparathyroidism that causes high levels of calcium in the body. Sensipar raked in about $1.7 billion in revenue for Amgen last year. According to Amgen's complaint, it received a letter May 21 that Accord Healthcare had submitted an abbreviated new drug application with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration seeking approval to commercially manufacture, use, sell, and or import a generic version of Amgen's Sensibar prior to Amgen's patent expiration. Amgen is seeking an order permanently enjoining defendants from making, using, offering to sell, or selling in the United States until the patent expires. Neither Amgen nor Accord Healthcare would comment. Earlier this year, Japan's Sumitomo Dainippon Pharma and Sunovion Pharmaceuticals sued Accord Healthcare over Accord Healthcare's plans for a generic version of a drug used to treat schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. TransEnterix sees revenue bump in second quarter. Surgical robot maker TransEnterix is reporting increased revenue over last year. In a preliminary, unaudited revenue report for the second quarter of 2018, the company discloses earnings between $6 million and $6.3 million, up from just $1.5 million for the same quarter last year. TransEnterix reports it sold 4 Senhance surgical robot systems approved in October by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in the second quarter. Those sales have included one in the U.S. to LSU Health. TransEnterix stock has continued on an upward trend in recent months. In May, following news of a $40 million loan agreement, TransEnterix saw a stock bump of more than 20% on FDA clearance for expanded indications of its Senhance surgical system. The company reported a net loss of $900,000 for the first quarter of 2018, compared to a net loss of $15.4 million for the first quarter of 2017. As of June 30, TransEnterix had cash and equivalents of about $98 million. And finally, in a section called He Said It, new law could have impact on how companies hire. A new North Carolina law is expected to lessen the hurdles for employers to hire people with criminal convictions. Governor Roy Cooper has signed House Bill 774 into law, which expands certificates of relief. As the economy heats up, the demand for skilled workers is going to increase, says Philip Strock, a shareholder in the Raleigh office of Ogletree Deacons Nash Smoke and Stewart. Many of these skilled workers face obstacles to employment because of a criminal record. Many employers may want or need to hire these workers but fear possible liability. The availability of certificates of relief is a win-win for both and may make it possible for more skilled workers to enter the workforce. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Ben Graham. First tenants sign on at revamped Golden Belt campus. A tech company is joining Asheville's High Wire Brewing as one of the first tenants to sign a lease at the freshly renovated Golden Belt campus in downtown Durham. Software agency WillowTree is moving into just over 29,000 square feet at an old warehouse on the campus that is being overhauled into a mixed-use space of offices, restaurants, and artist studio space. The company will move into the top floor of the old mill building by January, according to a statement. The campus is located off Main Street and at the intersection where Fayetteville Street becomes Elizabeth Street. WillowTree has offices in Virginia and New York, but CEO Tobias Dangle attributes much of the firm's success to the Bull City's innovative work culture. Durham has been an incredible part of our growth, Dangle stated. The talent in this area is among the best in the nation. WillowTree currently operates out of 5,200 square feet at the American Tobacco campus. The company has 80 employees in Durham, but the new space can accommodate up to 135. The Golden Belt campus is owned by LRC Properties of New York, which purchased the Mill No. 1 warehouse building in 2016 and later added to its investment by buying 6 neighboring buildings for $19.5 million. LRC co-founder and principal Howard Lavitt said his firm would pump $32 million into upgrades for the campus, which dates to the early 1900s and once served as a mill for textile and tobacco operations. The renovation of Mill No. 1 includes new artist studios and galleries, a nod to the Cordoba Art Center that once occupied the space. The majority of the renovations will be complete by November, according to a statement from LRC. Mill No. 1 totals almost 190,000 square feet. The remaining six-building portion of the campus is currently devoted to office space and apartments, but is undergoing renovations as well. As for High Wire Brewing, the brewery plans to open a 10,522-square-foot tap room in late 2018 that will include a covered patio and beer garden. Robin Anders and Jordan Williams of NAI Carroll Atlantic represented the landlord in the lease transactions. Matt Winters of Tri Properties represented Willow Tree in its deal, while Matt Larson of CBRE represented High Wire in its deal. Advance Auto, expanding in Raleigh with new office. Advance Auto Parts is outgrowing its existing offices in North Raleigh and has looked to downtown for more space. The car part retailer has inked a deal for just over 38,000 square feet at the Duke Energy Tower at 411 Fayetteville Street, a few blocks from the state capitol, and 7 miles south of its existing offices and warehouse on Millbrook Road. Advance Auto spokesman Kevin Nash wouldn't say whether the additional space means the company is hiring more employees, but did say the move will make room for marketing staff and the company's Raleigh-based IT team. Employees will be moving into the 17th and 18th floors of the building. There is a strong growth and technology focus downtown that aligns with our focus as an organization and that of our team members, Nash says. The company has its formal headquarters in Roanoke, Virginia, although CEO Tom Grieco and other high-level employees are based in Raleigh. When asked whether Grieco would be moving into the new offices downtown, Nash reiterated that the space is for marketing and IT teams. Advance Auto currently owns a warehouse in North Raleigh, along with three neighboring office buildings. The company's new home downtown had an office lease rate of $22 per square foot in the first quarter of 2018, according to Triangle Business Journal research. Since 2016, Duke Energy had been looking for a tenant to sublease the space in the 21-story tower, which served as the headquarters of Progress Energy before the two companies merged in 2012. Home prices in the Triangle continue to soar in May. Home prices continued to rise across the Triangle and faster in the western half of the region than in Raleigh. A new report from analytics company CoreLogic found that the housing price index for the Durham-Chapel Hill metro area jumped 6.1% in April compared to the same month the year before. In May, the increase was 5.5%. Those percentages were slightly lower in Raleigh, 4.9% in April and 5.4% in May. The price increases come as the inventory of housing for sale continues to decrease in the Triangle and across the country. More first-time buyers are looking to jump into the home buying market, but few homeowners want to sell. In the next year, 41% of renters are considering buying, while just 11% of homeowners are interested in selling, according to a study by CoreLogic and RTI Research. Rising interest rates also may be helping to constrict the supply of housing available to potential buyers. Cary developer denies using paid advocates at meeting. A hotel developer is denying it paid people to show up to a Cary Town Council meeting to speak in favor of its project, but town council members are skeptical. The controversy began when an anonymous ad surfaced on Craigslist recently seeking people who would attend the meeting and support an unnamed development proposal for $50 cash. After the meeting, Cary Town Council members believed the post was related to a development proposed along Weston Parkway by East Coast Hospitality. I think it was pretty obvious who replied to the post and may have come and spoken to us, council member Don Fran says. An attorney representing the firm, Jason Barron of Morningstar Law Group, said, "Our team had absolutely nothing to do with that ad." Two Triangle apartment complexes fetch nearly $100 million. A real estate investment firm that focuses on the Southeast has acquired two apartment developments in the Triangle, doling out nearly $100 million for 642 units. American Landmark paid $98.75 million for both Edinburgh at the Park in Durham and Edinburgh Commons in Raleigh, a price of $153,816 per unit. Both apartment communities date to the late 1990s and will undergo a rebranding and renovation effort, expected to cost around $4.5 million, according to the new owner. The seller is LiveCore, a Chicago real estate asset management firm that previously bought the properties for a combined $50.19 million in 2006. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Business page, written by Harrison Miller. NC wages up in 2017, but slightly behind U.S. average. North Carolina saw an average 3.3% increase in employee wages for 2017, according to the most recent data reported by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. The state employment rate also rose 1.5% over the year, increasing the number of employed to almost 4.4 million, on par with the national change. North Carolina is 28th nationally for weekly wages at $964, slightly below the U.S. average of $1,109. The state was ranked 22nd for percent increase in wages, although North Carolina's 3.3% wage increase fell 0.6% below the national average. Of North Carolina's large counties, defined as those with 75,000 or more persons employed, Wake County had the largest job growth, with employment increasing 2.9%. Durham County had a 1% increase in employment. Wake and Durham County had a 2.5% and 2.6% increase in employee average weekly wages, respectively. Guilford County led the state's largest counties with a 5.3% increase in wages. Durham and Chapel Hill's highest mean hourly wage was in management, with an average $65.45 per hour. Food preparation and service had the lowest hourly wage at $11.54. Similarly, in Raleigh, management was the highest paid occupation by the hour, with an average wage of $61.99. And food preparation and service had the lowest at $10.91. Consumer confidence dips over trade war concerns. The U.S. Consumer Confidence Index, a survey of consumer saving and spending habits, declined slightly in June to 126.4 from 128.8 for the month of May. The Consumer Expectations Index, which measures consumer confidence 6 months in the future, declined 4 points to 103.2 during the same period. Both indices are measures of economic optimism and published by the Conference Board each month. Although national confidence eased, the South Atlantic region saw the second largest increase in consumer confidence by region, growing to 142, up 5.5 points from the previous month. According to the University of Michigan's Survey of Consumers, which also indicates consumer confidence for present economic conditions and those in the near future, the potential impact of tariffs was a major reason for the decline in confidence. Richard Curtin, chief economist at the Survey of Consumers, said one in four consumers cited tariffs to have a negative impact on the domestic economy and in turn affected their confidence. Millennials are the most pessimistic consumers. The confidence index for those under 35 declined to 118.5 in June, down from 129.4 reported in May. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Demographic Changes Require Skillful Planning. We hear this all the time. Change is inevitable. But if you're running a business or you're in charge of strategy, just stating the obvious is not intelligence. To understand the undercurrent behind this change, one has to rely on data, specifically demographics. North Carolina, through its demographer, keeps track of the state's population shift and routinely puts out interesting data that could be a valuable tool for companies looking for their next generation of customers. The demographic shift is already underway in Wake, Durham, Orange, Johnston, Franklin, and Chatham counties, and the triangle is going to look vastly different by 2030. These counties collectively are expected to see the largest change in age, ethnic makeup, and income levels. Mind you, all these projections are calculated before Amazon, Apple, and other large economic development projects that would require a skilled workforce and rely on disruptive thinking by a predominantly younger group of workers. In Wake County, for example, between 2020 and 2030, about 142,000 people will migrate from other areas. Natural increase, births minus deaths, would amount to about 56,000 in Wake. In Durham, the migration number is estimated at 34,000, with the natural increase clocking in at 17,000. Johnston is 17,000 and 9,000. On the other hand, Franklin is 7,500 and a negative 386, reflecting an aging population. And finally, Chatham shows a similar trend as Franklin, with about 14,000 people moving in between 2020 and 2030, but the makeup of the current population actually decreasing by 2,000 people. In all, these six counties are starting at some 200,000 plus people moving in from outside the area. So who are they? Yes, the lure of jobs and good quality of life is the biggest attraction, but how would people know how these newcomers like to spend their disposable income? For that, we turn to the age and ethnic makeup of Triangle counties by 2030. In the Triangle's two largest counties, Wake and Durham, whites accounted for 66 and 46% of the population by 2010. By 2030, those numbers are estimated to remain virtually identical despite the large migration inflow. The largest percentage increase during the period is the Asian bloc, a pattern seen all across the U.S. Also, the migration analysis reveals people moving in are younger and would share a bigger percentage of natural increase in the coming years. Maybe now it is a good time for us to say change is inevitable, and it is coming soon. Now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the small business section for Jim Verdonick's column. Jim Verdonick leads Ward and Smith's FinTech Group in Raleigh and is the author of Crowdfunding, A Legal Guide to Investment and Platform Regulation. The headline, Time for Businesses to Truly Allow Freedom in the Office. Every July, my article talks about how to retain the freedom America's founders created for us. Since most of us spend most of our time working, I love talking about how to build the principles of freedom into our businesses. How free are you if you're not free at work? Speaking at the Cryptolina 18 conference recently about raising capital reminded me that freedom is alive and well in some parts of our business community. Cryptocurrency, coins, tokens associated with blockchain technology attract freedom lovers. You never saw so many libertarians in one place. We love the government not controlling our money. Cryptocurrency is a freedom-creating technology compared to government-controlled money. This reminded me about how business technology directly impacts our freedom, for better and for worse. Technology innovation pulls us in two directions, toward greater individual freedom and also allowing others to control us. Technology empowers individuals. A single individual can have a greater impact than 100 people in a couple of decades, than 100 people a couple of decades ago. America's founders bet people would thrive in the light of freedom, but also they knew that people have a darker side. Many people are afraid of freedom. Some people value security and peace over freedom. It scares them that they can't control how other people use their freedom. History taught the founders that people would use all available tools to control others. America's founders were primarily worried about people using government power to control others. That's why they created a government of limited powers, with checks and balances so that even the powers granted to the government could be negated by other parts of the government. But freedom has many enemies and often few friends. Technology makes our darker side more powerful. Technology gives people who desire to control others more power. How is the ongoing battle between freedom and control showing up in our businesses? Technology tracks everything workers do, all your communications. It's all digitized and analyzed. We used to call this spying. Now it's just collecting and analyzing big data. On the other hand, technology empowers small businesses to challenge bigger businesses. It's cheap to bring new products to market and tell other people about it, so new products and ideas spread faster. I'm challenging business leaders to do this. When you return to the office July 9, ask your team whether you should build more freedom into your business or more control. You assembled this team. You taught them. It's time to find out whether you and your team are on the same wavelength. Pose choices between real instances of freedom and real examples of control that you face in your workplace. Their answer may surprise and scare you because a lot of people love freedom for themselves but want to control others. Are you one of them? Will you disarm your monitoring systems? Will you accept some disorder as a small price to pay for freedom? Will you give up your control? You're free to do it or not, thanks to our founders. Hope you had a great July 4th. Now we'll return back to the Viewpoints page to read the column written by Lee Roberts, who is a former budget director for North Carolina. He's the managing partner of Sharpview Capital in Raleigh. The headline on his Viewpoint article, Demand for Commercial Real Estate is Changing. Triangle residents have grown accustomed to the sight of cranes, street closures, and construction vehicles. Even a casual observer can see that new office buildings, hotels, and apartments are going up everywhere, in established areas and emerging ones alike. But what's not as obvious is the way this real estate is being used is fundamentally changing. Office tenants are demanding more flexibility and exploring new locations. Microbreweries now share space with building contractors and old warehouses. Millennials are seeking different experiences, whether at work or when traveling. While large and established office tenants used to occupy the most expensive space in the most traditional locations, today those tenants often seek more. They want to attract and retain young employees, which means walkability, amenities, and interesting places to go for lunch or a beer after work. Durham's American Tobacco Project was one of the first national examples of this trend, with a former manufacturing facility now housing endowment managers and private equity firms. Raleigh's Warehouse District, traditionally home to art galleries, nightclubs, and vacant industrial buildings, has a new Class A office building called the Dillon. Co-working represents another major change. Early targets were local entrepreneurs who wanted an inexpensive alternative to their kitchen tables. These retrofitted spaces offer food trucks, coffee, and local microbreweries to encourage synergy and socializing. Some like HQ in Raleigh, the Frontier in Research Triangle Park, and American Underground in Durham also make additional expertise and programming available to their tenants. The concept has been so successful, it's gone corporate. Well-capitalized global players like WeWork, Industrious, and Spaces are now entering our markets and changing them in the process. WeWork is the anchor tenant at the new One Glenwood project in Raleigh and will be the largest tenant in the One City Center project in downtown Durham. Spaces will anchor a new office building in the East 54 development in Chapel Hill. These operators court not just local startups but large national tenants that prefer the flexibility and efficiency of on-demand office space in prime locations. Demand for warehouse space is shifting as well. Smaller tenants have traditionally occupied infill space, the older warehouses, closer into town, that don't offer the modern amenities and proximity to infrastructure demanded by the larger warehouse users. Yet much of this older space is now in high demand. Few municipalities want to see warehouses built on valuable, well-located land, constraining supply. Many such facilities, with classic bones of brick walls and steel girders, have been sought for new uses such as maker spaces and microbreweries. They're also well-suited as last-mile distribution facilities for same-day delivery services such as Amazon Prime Now. A good example in Raleigh is the old warehouse on Bush Street adjacent to the Beltline. Built in 1967 as a paper plant, the tenants now include an HVAC supplier, a building supply company, an aluminum distributor, and Amazon, which leases 28,000 square feet and has installed new lighting, flooring, and refrigeration. Another is the Dock 1053 project on Whitaker Mill Road in Raleigh. Built as a grocery distribution center in 1956 in what was until recently considered a no-man's land location, it now includes a hip restaurant, a well-known art gallery, a co-working space, and a microbrewery so popular that evening parking is a challenge. Hotels are seeing a similar transformation. Hotel customers used to focus on price and location. A younger clientele today demands more at all price points, meaning the coolness of a hotel's decor, bar, or even lobby music are now important attributes. Durham's 21C Hotel in the heart of downtown is a great example, as is the Aloft on Raleigh's Hillsborough Street. They share characteristics few would have considered important 15 or 20 years ago. A vibrant, walkable location, a trendy bar scene, and restaurants good and interesting enough to be patronized by locals as well as hotel guests. In an area as dynamic as the Triangle, some of these trends may be sustainable, while others might be replaced. As always, however, Triangle residents will be seeing plenty of change. And in some Triangle Business Journal news from around the state, High Point gets $1 million toward redevelopment projects. International Market Centers, which owns and operates about 6.2 million square feet of High Point showroom space, has pledged $1 million towards two High Point redevelopment projects. IMC, which recently merged with Atlanta's America's Mart, will donate $500,000 toward HP 365, an innovation center geared toward the furniture industry. The company has also pledged $500,000 to the developing baseball stadium, BB&T Point, by signing a five-year lease for a suite. "We are thrilled to play a role in the exciting economic development happening in the city of High Point," said Bob Marichick, IMC chairman and CEO. Duke Energy's Good is highest-paid utility CEO. Lynn Good was the highest-paid utility CEO in the United States last year, with her $21.5 million total compensation beating her nearest rival by almost $3 million. According to an analysis by S&P Global Market Intelligence, the 175-to-1 disparity between her compensation and the median employee pay at Duke Energy is the largest among utility companies. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138.